Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today, we have a special episode and a conversation with three people, three representatives from the VA Central California Healthcare System. The VA plays a vital role in the lives of veterans after they leave the battlefield, and the Central California VA is critically important, particularly for those in outlying rural areas. We have three representatives to discuss some of the aspects of what the VA does in our area, and they were fantastic to talk to. The first one is Froilan Garza, who is the interim executive director of the VA for Central California Healthcare System. We also have Amy Ruiz, the HCHV supervisor, and Kimberly Booz, BSN and RN, and who is the Women's Veterans Program Manager. We talk about a lot of the services the VA offers and the role that they serve in our community, and I found this conversation to be fascinating. One small note at the start, we did have some sound issues with this episode. I tried my best to mitigate those in post-production, but could only go so far, so please excuse some of the audio quality issues that you may run into while listening to this episode. Nonetheless, I would encourage you to listen to this podcast all the way through because there's interesting and vital information for our veterans community in this podcast, and you will learn a lot about the important role that the VA has in Fresno. Please enjoy our conversation, and Baker will take us there.
Investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best!
Kim and Freud, where do you guys like to eat in Fresno?
I'll turn it over to Kim to go first.
Well, thank you for that. Like I said earlier, I love one of my favorite lunch spots is Zenia. They call it fast Japanese food. We're Sinise, like.
Very nice. My favorite restaurant, and I've only been here in town for almost about 50 days now, and the one spot that has really hit home for me is Pad Thai. And I really enjoy that place. I like my food very spicy, and so they're able to do that.
What's your Pad Thai order? I also like that place. Tell me what your order is.
Yeah. I like to get the little combo they have where you get the red curry and chicken. I like to get their, I think it's called their chicken larb. I also like to get their soups. Their tom yum soups are always really tasty, but they're huge. They're really massive. And then I also like their cucumber salad. They can make it Thai spicy. That's their top of the top spicy level, Thai spicy. And so I always get everything Thai spicy. And they always look at me and they say, "Are you sure?" And I always tell them, "Yes, I want the Thai spicy." So it's pretty good. I really come to really enjoy it. Their noodles are great. Really enjoy their food.
Yeah, that's one thing that Fresno does really well is portion size. we never struggle in that domain, and it's always great for leftovers for the next day. And I also am a big fan of spicy. I've got a number of kind of topics that I want to go through and questions I have. For me, one of the things that I believe is that there are a number of key institutions in a community that can help to make that community a thriving, healthy community. And if those institutions are not functioning well, can really bring a community into a place where it struggles. And so it was really important for me to want to talk to you all about the services, because I think for those who are not veterans, who do not have immediate family members who are veterans, they maybe are unaware of kind of the incredible encompassing services that are offered by the VA. And so I'm going to start by talking about some questions related to healthcare and psychological services. One of the big things that has changed, not maybe recently, but over the last 20 years, is the VA's approach to trying to reduce long delays for service. And I know that the Veterans Choice Program was part of this, and there's a few different ways that this problem has been attacked. Freud, maybe to start, can you talk about how the VA thinks about delays in service and how they've approached remediating this problem, which can be one of the big things that people point out when they're trying to seek care from a provider about delays being a huge factor for them.
One of the very most important things that VHA has done over the last, maybe 5-7 years is really a pivot towards focusing on building internal access and building in particular mental health services across our system, because as it stands suicide prevention is our number one clinical priority. And we have to bring that front and center in everything we do. And it's not something in which VA can do alone. VA has to work with our community partners. This has to be a public health strategy in which all of us get involved and really help address and eliminate suicide amongst veterans and even in the general public. But for the most part, because of this focus, because of this effort to really build internal access, because we've been working with Congress over the last several legislative sessions to help us with a little more flexibility in hiring and in incentives and residency partnerships and those kinds of things, we've been able to really make a huge dent in our overall wait times when it comes to primary care, when it comes to specialty care services, and when it comes to mental health services as well. Because in VA, one of the greatest things, one of the most important things that we do in VA is everything, every clinical pathway, every therapy program is all evidence-based. And everything is based in the literature and in evidence and research. And so when we talk about behavioral health services, when we talk about mental health services, everything there is really based in science and making sure that we're following through with our evidence-based therapies and programs that we know works, that has an impact, that can change the life of a veteran who might be in dire straits. And so our teams come together to make that happen. Another novel element within our system is that mental health is one service, right? But we have a healthcare model within VHA known as the patient-centered medical home model, where there is a panel of patients that is managed by a primary care team. Within this panel of patients and this primary care team, there's about 1,200 patients that are assigned to that panel. The primary care team consists of the primary care provider, the registered nurse known as a care manager, the LVN, a medical support assistant to help schedule and follow through with certain things. We have a dietitian. We have a clinical pharmacist associated with the team. We also have complementary services from physical therapy to occupational therapy to chiropractic services. And the list continues and continues. But our core team of primary care is really the team that works with that veteran, develops a plan of care, and begins some of those consultations out to some of the specialty services within our system to include mental health services. And one of the interesting things that we have within our primary care patient-centered medical home model is that we embed mental health professionals into the primary care team so that if one of our veteran patients is coming in for their primary care appointment and they're going through their screenings or usual clinical reminders, those kinds of things with the primary care team, and they might pop positive with a suicide prevention screen or a homeless screen or a food insecurity screen, we're able to quickly pivot and do a warm handoff to that mental health professional right next door so that veteran patient gets the mental health attention and services they need right then and there during that primary care visit. And that makes it very unique in terms of the model we use in VHA. Okay. I know that was a lengthy response to your question, but I'd have to look at it from the full spectrum.
Yeah, no, that was great table setting because that allows me to branch off on a few other topics I wanted to discuss. Beyond wait times, another access issue is like geographic access. There's a lot of outlying rural communities throughout the Central Valley where transportation can be challenging. How have you thought about addressing kind of rural access, particularly here in Central California?
Excellent question. So we currently have our main medical campus in Fresno, and we have CBOX, known as our community-based outpatient clinics, located throughout the Central Valley. And we have a clinic in Oakhurst, we have a clinic in Merced, and we have a clinic in Visalia. And these clinics is really, this network of clinics is how we target our more rural areas and bring services closer to where our veterans live. In addition to that, there's always going to be a need for veterans transportation support from some of these outlying VA outpatient sites to our main campus for some of those highly specialized services, for in some cases, inpatient care needs, some surgical procedures, those kinds of things. And as a result of that, what we're able to do is we have a VA transportation network where we're able to, through our team here on the ground at main campus Fresno, deploy some of our transport teams to pick up patients at home and bring them into their appointment. But when we talk about our more rural areas, that's when it becomes a little bit more complicated. And so we are working with our community partners and veteran service organizations like the Disabled American Veterans, who actually just visited with the team and I last week, and we're moving as aggressively as we can to establish a DAV transport route from Visalia to Fresno and back and forth. And we work with partners such as DAV to help us identify and bring on board drivers. And the VA is able to partner with DAV to provide the actual van to transport veterans from a pickup spot to the VA and then back to that pickup spot. And so we're able to work with DAV in that respect to create these routes and be able to further complement the need of some of our rural veterans who are across the Central Valley. And so in addition to our VA voluntary transport network, in addition to our veteran service partnership with DAV, we also offer special mode transportation services for some of our more veterans that require, for example, wheelchair transportation or might be homebound in some cases. We're able to utilize some of our contracted vendors to pick up those veteran patients using our special mode program to pick them up in unique systems and buses, van transport systems to bring them safely to the VA and then back home. As a recent newer program, VA has across the country partnered with Uber. And in that partnership, VA is able to schedule a pickup for a veteran at their home, bring them to their appointment here at the VA, and then Uber will then pick them up at the VA and take them right back home. And that's our Uber Health Connect program. There is some eligibility criteria set in there for our beneficiary travel program, but overwhelmingly utilization has been very high. Veterans provide a lot of positive feedback for that, but we're always going to continue to have a need in some of our more rural areas. So as we continue to branch out into some of those outlying sites, we're going to continue to monitor closely utilization needs of our patients, and we'll be able to start adding more routes, more services, partner with more DAV groups, and get that going.
I want to transition, and this is your domain, Kim, and I want to dig into this a little bit. I think when people picture, when they hear the word veteran, they might picture in their mind a male, but we know that at least as of 2022, about 17.5% of people enlisted in the military are women, and women have different healthcare needs, and you need different kinds of facilities and supports. Can you talk about how the VA works to support women that have healthcare needs and any kind of programs that have been designed specifically for women so we can support this demographic just as well as we support men?
Okay. Sure. So what they did is they started a directive, and I apologize, I can't remember exactly the year that this came out, but I want to say it was 1988. When that started, they started building like bylaws and directives around how women are treated, and things like the way a table placement is in an exam room, ensuring that there is a curtain where you can have privacy. I talked a little bit earlier about what we have women health providers. Now, this is something a provider can opt in if they want to see women as part of their panel. If they do, then they need to take certain CEUs, which is continuing education units, that are women's health related. And that's getting them educated. We also have a women's health medical director. Her name is Dr. Rylander. And some of the things that we do is, we're talking about care, is we're looking at, okay, we need a gynecologist. We just recently, our gynecologist went for DIA, or what we call here at the VA, fee for basis. We have been able to secure one of a fantastic gentleman who is, he's a veteran, and he's going to come on part-time. So we're looking at, we talk about care for women veterans, is we look at that kind of care. But we're also looking at, we did education the last couple of years, at least here on site, and I'm sure nationwide, is the goal is, regardless of the person in front of you, just assume they're a veteran. One of the biggest things that we do in women's health, we have quarterly focus groups where we meet with veterans. And in the past, we would hear, they assume that I'm the caregiver. So that has really been the messaging out to staff. Just assume whoever is in front of you that they are the veteran. That answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about stigma next and mental health. This is Friardi kind of a gestured towards suicide rates being one of the biggest issues that the VA deals with. And we know that suicide rates amongst veterans are so much higher than the average population. How have either of you seen relationship between mental health services and stigma change in your time at the VA? Are we seeing more veterans being open to receiving mental health services at higher rates? And what are we doing to try and address that stigma in particular?
So absolutely. I've been in VA for 16 years, and I have seen a lot transition and transform in terms of a lot of the stigma associated with receiving mental health services, with suicide prevention efforts. Overall, our men and women who enter our armed forces, they get taught to deal with things. They get taught to make it work with what they have. They're in tough situations and they're able to persevere and in some cases give up parts of themselves and their life, their health, their body in service to this country. And so when they return to the United States, for example, and they transition to civilian life, it can be a big challenge for many of them to have this paradigm shift of no longer in the military, making it work with what they have, but now understanding there's a lot of health benefits and services now available to them through the VA healthcare system, and accessing that and knowing when and how to access those services can be a challenge. But there's been a lot of work done on the part of our DoD partners and the various military branches and how they work with VA at different parts of the discharging process across the country to bring VA front and center and have an opportunity during that discharge process to that cohort of discharging military active duty servicemen and women about the services available to veterans, about the need to seek help when they need it, about the quick and easy convenient options that VA now provides, whether it be primary care, whether it be specialty care, whether it be mental health services, through VA Video Connect, where you can connect on your mobile device in between classes, on a break from work. Those kinds of things make accessing care so much more easier and convenient for veterans. But we still have a lot of work to do. And like I mentioned in my opening comments, VA cannot do this alone. We have to work with our communities across the country. We have to continue working with those nonprofit and veteran service organizations to help us get the word out that we're here to serve veterans and that we have a lot of eager staff waiting to jump right into action and to help reduce and eliminate that stigma amongst our armed forces as they transition from active duty to civilian life and then be able to access those services as easily as possible.
Something that's really intrigued me because it's in the news recently is how the VA has approached addressing homelessness amongst the veteran population. We've locally had a number of homelessness ordinances, some related to encampments and some related to how to help individuals transition into permanent housing. Can you talk a little bit about how the VA has approached this? In particular, we had a podcast a few weeks ago with the authors of Homelessness as a Housing Problem, which is a fantastic book that looks at housing markets and how they affect homelessness. And one of the reference points in the book is how fantastic the VA's program has been and how successful it's been. So could you share a little bit about the approach and the conceptualization behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. We have various strategies for addressing the encampments. Our mission at the VA is to ultimately have no veteran unhoused. In response to the encampments, strategically what we're doing is trying to develop those outreach teams to actually get in there in the trenches and go to the encampments. Our goal is always to be preventative versus reactive. We want to make sure that we are doing our best to coordinate with community partners such as law enforcement and staying ahead of the game so that we can reach out to those veterans that are in encampments and securely get them to shelter or where they need to be before any kind of repercussions are happening.
Just one thing I was going to ask Amy to maybe talk a little bit about is the community partnerships that VA has built with a lot of our VSO groups and community groups in hosting homeless stand downs and how effective that has been across our system.
Sure. So we greatly depend on a lot of community partners, such as one is San Joaquin Valley Veterans, Central Valley Veterans. In our community, we really take the approach of a one-team approach, is that we're all in this together, and our goal is ultimately to house our veterans and get them into stable and safe housing. So we do that by use of community partners, like I said, San Joaquin Valley Veterans, Community CVV. We also have our own community partners within, which is Veteran Justice Outreach, that we use to help address like the criminalization of homelessness and preventing those repercussions. We do have a stand down. We just had a stand down, and that is mainly hosted by the VA and tons of other community partners, one main being Central Valley Veterans, which they do amazing work to help us support our homeless veterans and get them to permanent and secure housing.
Okay. I want to talk about caregivers next. Supports in the home are the first line of defense and first line of support in many ways. Can you talk about some of the programs that the VA has for people who have family members, veteran family members who are struggling with either mental health or health conditions as a result of their service?
Sure. More and more, VA is understanding a critical role that caregivers play, in particular for our veteran population. And there have been some more recent programs that have come live over the past several years, primarily the caregiver support program, which initially, when it was rolled out, was providing some counseling services, some supportive services to caregivers in support of a veteran. And more recently, there's been some newer updates to the program in which we are now able to pay and reimburse a caregiver, for example, that is taking time off of work or doesn't have a currently employed caring for full-time their veteran. And we're able to do that within the two components of our caregiver support program, which is a really popular program amongst many veterans. Initially, when it came out, it was for a certain veteran population, and then it's been expanded to include post 9/11 veterans as well. And we're seeing more and more veterans apply for that program, which is a good thing. In addition to that, what we've started to see in terms of our mental health programming across VHA is bringing into the mix of our staffing model family therapists. And so we've been able to start bringing some of those positions in to help us in that respect in terms of how we're incorporating the full family and the full caregiving team for that particular veteran. So it is an area in which continues to get more and more focus and more attention. And we're looking forward to that program overall growing into the future.
Okay, before we transition to another domain, I wanted to ask each of you to talk a little bit, and you can share briefly, certain specific things, whether it's mental health and other health. I'm married to a clinical psychologist, so she's always distinguishing between, I'm going to cut this out. She's always distinguishing, it's all health. But I'm saying generally, let me rephrase the question. Sure. I would love for each of you to share any specific acute issues that we see in Fresno that are maybe specific to Fresno relative to some of the other facilities across the United States. Are there specific issues in Fresno that you've noticed that are issues that our veterans are dealing with in this specific area?
I'll go first, and then I'll let maybe Kim and Amy jump in. But again, I've only been here for about 50 or so days there, Jordan, and I'm still learning quite a bit. But one of the things that I have noticed is that because of where this system is at in our rural area, right in between some really large cities across California, we tend to have a challenge with recruitment of specialty providers, recruitment of psychologists, recruitment of highly unique specialized specialties. And that can be and present within itself a challenge. Over the past several years, what our team has had to do is really work towards virtual care services through some remote providers and support. We have since made a pivot over the past year or so and really focusing on bringing providers on board for in-person care, because we continue to hear from our veteran patients, that's what they prefer. And we're hearing them loud and clear, and we're taking action on that. We are moving full steam ahead with incentivizing in-person care for our new recruits as we come across them. And we have some really nice academic partnerships with UCSF and other affiliate programs, and we're able to really start to build that pipeline of future physicians, hopefully within the VA system here in Fresno, and if not in our community here in Central California. And so there's that right there is a huge challenge for us. And I think we're making some headway and we're transforming the way we deliver services to veterans here at VA Central California. And it's going to take us some time, but we'll get there. And I'll turn it over to Kim and Amy.
I would double down on what Mr. Garza said, because, for example, but this is not necessarily a VA issue. For example, for a veteran to go out into the community and get a mammogram, you're looking at roughly, it can be up to 8 weeks. Now, that is not because it's a VA, it's not a system thing, it's literally lack of availability within the community. I'll use myself as an example. It's about the same, it's the same waiting time for myself. And there's an 8 week delay. Now if you need a diagnostic, that means if they found something they need to do another one, it's upwards of 12 weeks. But what we're doing to combat that is because of this access within our Fresno community, is I'm working with my district lead. So veterans who want to be seen sooner, if they wish to, we're getting them into other VAs that can see them sooner. But that is something not just we're feeling within the VA, but this is a community, a Fresno community issue. And it's actually worse even in the South Valley.
Interesting. Do you see the future as a lot more telehealth or providing people travel vouchers to get to certain places? Like, where are we going with this? Because what you're describing is something that in the number of shows that we've done around healthcare in Fresno, there's provider shortages in every domain. And so I guess the big question is, I know none of us have crystal balls, but like, where's the way through?
My focus would be on and is on bringing and building internal access for veterans across the board. When VA is able to provide that care in-house, we see better coordinated care. We see overall better health outcomes because of the systems and one-stop electronic medical record that we use. And so the more that we're able to build internal access by building our programs, by enhancing our programs and expanding them across the board, the better it'll be and the more safe it will be for our veteran patients. When we talk about the shortage of specialty providers and so many different areas across our region, our market, what we're doing as a regional VA system, because we're part of a larger VA network within California and in Southern Nevada, and what we're able to do as a regional network is create what we call clinical resource hubs that are able to provide specialty, in some cases even primary care, support virtually to systems within that regional network that need that help. And there's a lot of innovative new specialty services that are already available. And there's also several that are in the works and continue to grow across not only our regional network, but across the country's regional networks. And so virtual care is going to continue to be something that we'll be able to tap into as we need it. But overwhelmingly, the more that we can incentivize providers and incentivize them for in-person care, the more that we build upon our academic partnerships in the community with all the different specialties we have, we'll continue to see some traction in that respect. But it's still a challenge, and it's going to continue to be a challenge as the research and studies project there to be a major shortage of physicians across the board for the future of the U.S. medical system.
Amy, do you want to share something specific that you see you do that's specific to Fresno?
So specific to Fresno, I would definitely see the lack of affordable housing, that even though we have tons of resources to wrap around and hug our veterans as they're going through this crisis, the lack of affordable housing in our geographical area, which includes like six counties, makes it very difficult for our veterans.
Yeah, I think recently I saw that the rental vacancy rate in Fresno was something like 2%, which is it would be crazy if it was San Francisco, but this is Fresno. And so I know exactly what you're referring to. And it's quite a conundrum. We need quite a bit more affordable housing. Go ahead, please.
Well, and we do, I just want to add that we do a lot of community outreach with landlord incentives and trying to build relationship with landlords to help them realize that this is also an opportunity for them to give back and help us to rent to our veterans. And when that happens, a lot of times it's not just, we're not just placing them in an apartment. We're providing them with all those wraparound services to sustain that housing. And even with that, with the lack of affordable housing, it just, it becomes a huge barrier.
Okay. Another topic, and I feel like this is important to talk about because I'm not sure the general public knows about the MST program and the ways that the VA has approached sexual harassment, sexual assault, and programs to address that in the military. This is for anyone that wants to talk about it. Can you share what the program is and the issues that it's trying to address within the military?
So I'll talk about it since it typically, not always, affects women. The statistic is that 1 in 3 military women have experienced sexual trauma. And so currently, they just hired a brand new, she's a PhD. She is our military sexual trauma coordinator. And so what they do is we get them in contact with, we get veterans in contact with her to help work through that. And I know she has, and Amy, you might know more about this since you're in social work, but I know she has a courage group that she, that they did in the past. And interesting enough, we just did an outreach event for women veterans at Fresno State. And we always bring it up, even though it's a sensitive subject. And sure enough, there was a veteran there that was specifically why she wanted to get enrolled in her VA benefits, was to reach out to this board. Really, I think it's a way that they feel like they're heard and they have camaraderie with other veterans who've gone through that.
And I know that doesn't only affect women, right? That sexual assault and sexual harassment is experienced by everyone, or all demographics, I should say. And is there different ways that it's approached in terms of services for different demographics?
Tell you, you got to love it. So one of the neat things about VHA is, and I hit on this earlier, when I talked about the suicide screens that we do for every single primary care patient that we have scheduled every day, even for walk-ins for that matter, we have also some MST screening criteria that our teams utilize every single day for primary care appointments that help us identify a potential need to refer a patient to our MST coordinator or to a unique therapist and or therapy group, and offer all of these options to that patient to see what best suits their needs. And so we're able to do that from a screening aspect of things, but we're also able to market and make known who our MST coordinator is and make sure that if veterans, whether you're male or female, can reach out directly to her if they have questions and want to learn a little bit more about the program, and then connect that veteran for the care and services they need.
I have a couple questions to close up here. One of them was a question I received when I told someone I was having a conversation with some folks in the VA, and I don't know if you can answer this, but there is a rumor that the VA is moving to Clovis. Is that rumor true? Is it something you can answer or not?
Jordan, not sure the last time you were on campus, but we are constrained for space. Parking is a headache, and I hear from our veteran patients almost every day. I say, Mr. Garza, when are we getting a parking garage? And we're probably not going to get one anytime soon. We do have some strategies we're deploying now to better manage our parking situation and better utilize some of our parking lots that surround the campus. But we are working on a strategy to submit a replacement hospital project into our strategic capital investment planning program. Typically, when we submit these projects, they go through several reviews, several rounds of scoring and ranking and competition amongst other projects across the country. And so depending on where we score, depending on where we rank, depending on where we end out, we might be looking at a potential new project on the horizon. You just never know until we get that feedback from central office. So we're looking at all aspects of trying to build upon what we currently have, make it more accessible, but we're also looking ahead and seeing what we need to do now, what we need to start planning for today to be able to meet the demand in the future.
Absolutely. And maybe this next question is just for Kim and Amy, who I think have been here a bit longer. I ask all my guests this question because I think it's an interesting question in that it gets you to see through someone else's eyes for a moment. And so I work in public education, and I tend to see the world through that lens, both the problems and solutions. When I see a problem in a municipality, I think, well, that's an education problem. We could help people learn how to access the services they need, then they would get those services and everyone would thrive a lot more in a city. How does what you do, Amy and Kim, affect the way that you see the city of Fresno?
I can go first. Yeah. I have been working in the homeless program for about 3 years now, and I can definitely say that it really brings a realistic and true vision to a national crisis that we're dealing with. And that while one individual cannot necessarily put an end to homelessness, together we are so much more powerful. And so there are answers and there are solutions, but it's definitely about working together to meet that mission and try to make it impactful and make the city of Fresno even more comfortable and more safe than it already is.
I'll tell you my experience with women veterans and the community, it's been eye-opening. I came from a very different experience. I came from community hospitals. The people who in Fresno who support the veterans are extremely generous. Every time we've needed something, I'll give you a perfect example. We had a veteran who was a new mom, had a baby in Children's Hospital, and she was in the NICU. And she needed a special car seat to bring her baby home. Interesting enough, it was a male donor who basically said he wanted to sponsor to get this mom a car seat. But he went out and got her this gorgeous car seat, stroller, carrier, where she was able to bring her baby home. And that's, we have a drive-through baby shower every year, just FYI, around Mother's Day. But that's just an example. There's been many instances where they have just the donations that we get are just touching. So I came from another aspect of it, where if you've ever been to community hospital or UMC, the former UMC, if you work with indigent, it's not always that way, where it's very different. It really opened my eyes. And this is something unique to Fresno, because the other women veteran program managers have not seen. They don't get to see what here in Fresno.
So. Yeah, there's an incredible level of generosity to veterans in Fresno, and I see that. And I think it's something unique and special about where we live. I close every podcast, and I don't know that maybe the outline didn't get to every one of you, and so you can pass on this if you'd like. But I ask every guest at the end of each show for a book recommendation. I don't know if you have one handy in your brain that would be a good one to throw out. It can be about this, or I had the community college chancellor recommend a bunch of Star Trek sci-fi novels. So it doesn't really, there's not really a specific kind of requirement, but if you have a book you'd like to recommend, I would love to hear it.
Some of the things I always like to read on is just some of the, VHA is currently on what we refer to as a journey to zero harm, high reliability journey to zero harm of patients. And the way we do that in a lot of different cases is setting an expectation, setting the tone, building a foundation of safety and a culture of safety in everything we do. And one of the mechanisms and strategies that we deploy is this concept of psychological safety and how we create an environment in which psychological safety can exist and where psychological safety begins at the workgroup level. And so I'm always interested in reading more about this and how large organizations, both public and private, are able to do this kind of work. And because of that, I've been reading Timothy Clark's Four Stages of Psychological Safety. And it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. A lot of real world examples, and I can make the connection, and that's always helpful.
Kim, Amy, do you guys have books, maybe, potentially? If not, no worries.
I know. I don't know if you'd want to recommend what I read.
Oh, no, I want to hear anything that you'd have to recommend. Absolutely.
Being my faith background, this is my go-to every day. It's called Grace for Today, and just a little one-minute devotional.
That's fantastic. Amy, do you feel the peer pressure?
I do. I can't really think of anything. I mean, I can share that one of my favorite autobiographies is anything by Dave Peltzer. Okay. But that comes from the very social work world. So that's what I would share.
Fantastic. Kim, Froy, Amy, thank you so much for taking the time. And thank you so much for the work you do for our veterans. As a son of the grandson and then a son of a veteran, I really appreciate the work that you've done to support this community that gives so much. So thank you all.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.